You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Corn. I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports Michael Gannon and Keith Jackson. Guys, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Daniel. How are you, Mick?
All right, chaps. Not too bad. Not too bad. Just getting my Halloween costume sorted for this weekend.
I can see you're wearing it already.
Well, it comes with a free mask. Thank God.
Is that you going as Will Ferrell again?
I'm going as a Harry monster.
the banter's in full flow. I think the best place for us to start, guys, is, of course, last night. We're recording this on Thursday, Celtic Atletico Madrid. Mick, I'll maybe start with yourself. I mean, the first half was some of the best football I've seen Celtic play in years, I think, particularly in Europe. But ultimately, couldn't get that win.
Yeah, I thought the first half they were terrific. Some of the football was sensational. It's quite nice seeing a Scottish team trying to go toe-to-toe with the best in Europe. I think what we saw again last night is that they can do that, but it's maintaining it for 90 minutes is brutally tough. And I think we saw even last year with Ange Postecoglou as well. You can have a good go at these teams for 45 minutes or an hour, then it gets really tough because the energy expended to do that makes it really difficult to kind of keep it going for the full 90. Listen, you've got to take into account the fact that Madrid are a right good side. I mean, they're really a proper European team. And the second half, they threw the kitchen sink at Celtic. And Celtic kind of did well to kind of just about hang on. I know it went to 2 each, but they managed to hold on to the man that sent off. And after that, Simone was quite happy taking his point up the road. But that first half was pretty thrilling. Quite exciting for Celtic fans because we're still very early in the kind of Brendan Rodgers second coming. I think he's had a pretty disappointing transfer window that's left him short for this campaign. But he's mending and make do, and he's done a pretty decent job of competing with these teams. He's not, in the 3 games so far, they've been involved and competed in every one of them. A wee bit unlucky against Lazio. Hallward was a funny one as well. But they've competed, they've not been out of depth, and this is where a team that's been patched together and it's very early in the kind of his reign. So I think it's a lot of positives. I think the campaign is pretty much dead in the water now. That's the only thing. I don't see them getting out of this group or even third place. Looks a bit dodgy. But a lot to enjoy about that first half performance last night.
Keith, it was brilliant football in the first half, particularly Matt O'Reilly, Kyogo for the goal.
Daniel, do you know something? It was out of this world. And it was one of these games that you're at where you're thinking, I'm just lucky to be here. It was just such a good game of football. And that was my big takeaway from it. I think that, unfortunately with Celtic, and you can understand it, I think that when they come up against teams of that level, Champions League level, I mean, they have to go absolutely full tilt. They plug into the energy inside the stadium, which was mental ahead of kickoff for other reasons. But it set the place on fire. And I think, because you keep seeing this now, you know, they start like a train. What was really impressive, as Mick was saying, the football, some of the one-touch stuff, the goals, that the Kyogo's first goal, the two passes from Matt O'Reilly are just ridiculous. It's a work of art, that goal. And make no mistake about it, because you could tell when you were there, Atletico Madrid were absolutely rattled. They were frazzled by the atmosphere. And Celtic were pinging the ball around. They just looked stung. But I think, and the more you see it, the more we get into these second halves at Celtic Park and these games, the high intensity, it starts to dip. The crowd start to dip a little bit as well. Chicken or egg, who knows what comes first. But the opposition, slowly but surely, they get their wits back about them. They start, Griezmann last night was out of this world as well. and gradually they got a foothold in the second half, right from the start of the second half, in fact, you just felt that, you know, Celtic couldn't maintain that flat out 100 miles an hour energy that they needed to get in front, to get their noses in front and get on top of the game in the first half. I don't know if you can sustain it for 90 minutes. You need to be superhuman. And I think that could be a problem. And I think as their energy dipped, the crowd's energy dipped, and I think that there's a feeling, because it's happened so many times before, Celtic have played so well in so many of these games, ultimately there's a, you know, a last minute winner coming, or a, you know, and it was an equaliser that came, obviously, I think 8 minutes into the second half last night. And at that minute in time, if anybody was going to win it, you did think or suspect it would be Atletico until they went down to 10. And, you know, that took the sting out of the tail. But the sting felt as if it was coming. And you felt that the energy around the stadium, the noise, it drops because people start getting nervous because they think, well, we've been here before. We know what comes next. And the vibrancy, the energy, the noise that was there in the first half, it starts to dip, it starts to become a little bit more muted, more nervous. And I don't know if that's to do, if that comes from the stands and transmits to the players or if it's the other way around, but it's something, and it happens time and time again.
I agree as well, Keith. Watching Celtic in these games, I keep thinking about the Wile E. Coyote cartoon, the Roadrunner. He runs across the cliff out in the fresh air, and he keeps on running. And it's not until he looks down, he falls. It's almost like, just keep running, you might make it across to the other side. And Celtic, at some point, look down. it tends to be the case in these games.
Yeah.
It is, look down, and that's at the bottom of the canyon. But it's the thing is, though, that effort required. I mean, you talk about the late sting in the tail. That comes from fatigue, because it doesn't just drain you in terms of energy. It drains you in terms of concentration.
Mentally, yeah.
Mentally drains you.
There's a strain involved in having to play at that level, yeah.
I mean, you're having to race across that canyon without a safety net for so long. At some point, you're going to fall. And it's happened time and time again. And that's what happens against quality. I mean, the second goal that Atletico scored last night was quality. Absolute quality. The guys that are top operators in world football scoring a top goal. And it's you guys who are playing way above their level. I mean, guys like Liam Scales. I mean, sensational again.
Terrific.
Coming from Ireland, looks as though he's done all right. Probably got a good career in Scotland in the top flight outside Celtic. All of a sudden now he's undroppable. I mean, his place is nailed in the squad.
He was an absolute rock last night. But brilliant.
Brilliant again.
See, if you go right through the team, you don't find there's not a bad performer in there. But there were some outstanding performers. Callum McGregor, incredible. But that's the level you just come to expect of him. But see, when Celtic had their best spells, and there were long spells in the first half, just everything was going through him. He was coming back, taking the ball off full-backs, centre-backs, building moves, popping balls around the corner, getting it back, moving it again. He was the fulcrum in the middle of the park. Matt O'Riley just was gliding over the ground and picking beautiful passes and just superb. He had a superb performance from him. Kyogo, I'm not Maida's biggest fan, right? Because if he had the intelligence and the craft to match the pace and the energy, well, he wouldn't be in Scotland. He'd be somewhere else entirely, and it'd be costing £40 million. So I'm not his biggest fan, but my God, the work rate he put in last night, he was all over the place, shutting people down. It was just a terrific performance. But the thing that I found most pleasing, I think as Mick was getting at earlier, see a Scottish side saying, no, come on, we don't need to park the bus here. We don't need to sit in, defend our penalty box. We can come, we can be expansive, and we can try and play through you. And for long spells last night, Celtic did it. They didn't deserve any more than a draw, I think, you would have to say at the end of the game, because Atletico started to control it in the second half. So Celtic gave it their best, and their best ultimately wasn't good enough to win the game. But by God, it was great to watch. It was just a terrific game of football. Anybody that's been brought up loving football, that's the sort of games you want to watch. It was impossible not to just be sucked in by the whole thing last night. It was a great occasion and a terrific football match.
I actually think that, this is going to sound a bit weird, but I think Celtic should take more confidence from the second half performance than the first. I mean, no, this is a football team that can play good football. They've done it in this campaign before, right? But see that second half, Celtic, when the pressure's been turned against them, have tended to buckle in Europe. Last night, they actually, I mean, Atletico threw the kitchen sink at Celtic that second half, and they held firm. I think, I mean, there are a couple of chances, scored the goal, but I think Joe Hart maybe one big save. It wasn't like it was hitting the post and making 10, 12 saves. I think they, the fact that they held firm, I mean, Rodgers, I thought, was actually really cute, the way he changed his formation. He went to a 3-5-2 or a back five. He knew the problems when Greg Taylor was getting a lot of hassle in that left flank, wasn't he?
Well, I think by that point, Lewis Palmer's race had been run.
Aye.
I think that Rodgers identified that. He said, Greg Taylor's getting overrun down
totally.
We need to do something to steady the ship. And there was a bit of a groan around the stadium, and then it's sort of a, you know, kind of muttered confusion. What's he doing there? Why are we going here? Because it was just, it's not from his playbook that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
But I think it was probably the right thing to do. It might have taken a little bit of the attacking impetus away.
100%.
But had to steady the ship. Listen, as he said himself after Lazio, if you're not going to win this, then just make sure you don't lose it. And I think that was high in his mind at that point.
Listen, I don't like this learning curve and experience nonsense that always gets tipped off their defeats and all that stuff. But I think that was a learning experience. This showed this team that trust in the manager, that they can see a game and manage a game differently. And I think that's something they might take a lot from as well. And in the Champions League, there's going to be hurt. There's going to be periods of the games where you need to suffer and you need to dig in. Unfortunately, for Celtic, in those periods, they've conceded.
Yeah.
Usually right before half-time, right after half-time, late in games. The periods of the matches when they're going to need to really hang on in there. And I think by and large, they did that last night during that period. So it might be frustration not getting the result against 10 men at the end. But I think the way they managed the game that second half, even under intense pressure, I think they can take a lot from that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Michael, it's funny you used the word there, trust. And I think it's taken a little bit of time. And you can understand why. That squad was largely assembled by Ange Postecoglou. Ange Postecoglou is showing at Spurs right now what a top-class manager he is. And I think that, because managers use the word trust all the time, that the manager needs to be able to trust these players to perform the way that he's asking them to take on the information, to play the game the under instruction. The players need to trust the manager that his instructions are the right instructions, and they might be a little bit different from the last guy. And wait a minute, this last guy is really good. You just need to look at what's happening in the Spurs. And then there's the factor between the fans and the team and the manager and the element of trust there. And the way that I look at Celtic just now, over the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, you can feel it, the reconnection. The players have learned. The new guys that haven't worked with Brendan Rodgers before have realised, do you know what? This guy really knows what he's doing. And the little tweaks that he's making, they are making us more competitive in Europe. Where Ange, you know, I think Celtic were a bit too open, a bit too vulnerable, maybe a bit too naive. And maybe that could have been, you know, Brendan Rodgers could have been accused of that first time round as well, a bit of naivety, not pragmatic enough. But I think game by game, these players are realising, look, if we do what this guy tells us to do, we're actually improving and we can feel the improvement. They trust what they're being told. Brendan Rodgers trusts these guys to go out and play the way he's instructing them to do it. And you can feel that the fans are starting to trust the team again. And it builds a very healthy picture all round. I mean, not for this campaign, because I think Michael's right. I don't think Celtic are going to get third now. I think when you look, final's result last night was probably the worst possible outcome.
No, it was a nightmare.
I think a draw in that game would have been ideal. Even, you know, a Lazio win might have not been the worst thing in the world. I think third place is going to be a real stretch now, because I can't see Celtic going to Madrid and taking anything. As good as the performance level was last night, I think they're going to be looking at 1 point from 12 going into the final two games. And I don't know if it's going to be achievable from there. But in terms of this level of trust, I think the supporters are now. Well, did they trust Brendan Rodgers when he came back? I'm not sure they did. Do they trust him now? Sitting, you know, 7 points clear at the top of the league, performing like that against some of the top clubs in Europe. I think they trust him wholeheartedly again. And you can feel it. And you can feel there's a better atmosphere around the place. And Brendan has spoken about that as well, the importance of unity, the importance of everybody moving forward together. I don't think he felt that was the case for the first few weeks. I think he felt there were people who were waiting, you know, with knives ready to be drawn, and in the hope that he fell over, that something went wrong. And I'm talking about within, you know, the Celtic support. They didn't want him back. I think you'll find that that no longer applies. This feels like a healthy sort of environment around Celtic now. And, you know, it doesn't bode well for this campaign, but certainly bodes well for the domestic campaign and for, you know, future European campaigns to come.
Keith, are you sensing a slight change in Brendan Rodgers in recent weeks? I can sense, yeah, something. I thought when he first came back, I thought, I'm not saying he looked like a guy who maybe wasn't sure if he made the right decision, or I just thought it was a bit, maybe the main circumstances dictated it, but it was a bit understated, it was a bit low-key. I just felt it was, I don't know, maybe, listen, you can't jump the kind of guy's head, he never said these words to anyone. I just thought, did he look as though he's maybe made the right choice? But something has flipped. I don't know if it was Ibrox going to win in there, but he looks like a guy who's all in at the moment. I think he looks like a guy who's enjoying being king of his castle again. He's got the juices flowing. I saw him pushing shields over at Livingston and all that, the fist bumps and all that stuff. I think that's a guy who's now is starting to get the juices flowing again.
Michael,
you're there. I knew that he's unveiling. I didn't see it in the summer. I thought it looked a wee bit kind of...
I was there.
Understated.
I was there. I felt underwhelmed by the occasion.
Maybe.
I think that, you know, Brendan loves to be loved. And exactly. When he first arrived at Celtic Park, there was, you know, how many thousands outside the ground, inside the stadium. It was, you know, the Messiah was arriving. Well, when he came for, you know, the second coming, it was three men and a dog outside the stadium.
I was one of them. I was important to
say. People too.
I wouldn't say it took the wind out of his sails, but I think it was a realization that he's got a lot of bridges to build. To be honest, Michael, there were points throughout the first wee while where you're thinking, I'm not sure he's fully in the room here.
Yeah.
But yes, and I think there come a point, I wrote a column, I don't know, a couple of months ago, where he needs to stop feeling as if he needs to apologise all the time. He needs to realise that, you know, things happen. Celtic are lucky to have Brendan Rodgers. And, you know, he doesn't need to spend the rest of his life apologising for the fact that he left to take on a career opportunity. He just needs to concentrate on what he's good at. And he's done that, and you can see him. He's grown in stature. He's, you know, the chest is getting a little bit more swollen. He is returning to the guy that you remembered the first time round, perhaps with a little bit less bluster. Perhaps, you know, not. I wouldn't say sheepy. I think that was what I wrote. Michael, I said, he needs to be a lot less sheepish and a bit more bullish. And yeah. I think that's what you're starting to see now. I think, and I think that as well, that comes with, do you know what? The things that I'm trying to implement here are working and everybody can see it. And I think that's making him feel just a little bit better about himself. And make no mistake, when he walk off the park at Tynecastle at the weekend and the Celtic fans there are singing his name, that was a big moment for Brendan Rodgers. And before the day before the Atletico game, we're down at Celtic Park doing the press conference, and he did bring it up. You know, it wasn't put to him, but he said, "Yeah, it is quite ironic that was the stadium where, you know, they had the banner the last time."
Yeah.
So that shows that it's not far from the surface. Mm-hmm. That these are things that he has been thinking about. It wasn't that somebody said to him, "Well, you know, the irony is here, Brendan." That's in his head, nobody else's. In fact, I couldn't even have told you it was Tynecastle. But Brendan Rodgers could. Mm-hmm. So I think there are little hurdles, step by step, the breaking down of these barriers, the reconnection, the building of bonds. And I think you've now got Celtic approaching, you know, full speed ahead, and Brendan Rodgers returning to that similar sort of a approach in the dugout. And, you know, as I said, it bodes well for them because they are going to pick up some serious momentum. You just feel now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sorry, Mike, on you go.
No, I just think what these three games, I think, have showed the Celtic board as well is give the guy the tools. Look what he's doing. Look what he's doing with what he's got just now. Give him the tools. And see, one of the things that I thought was a bit jumped out that then the financial statement they put out when they said they've got all this money, you know, they've made their record profits and all that stuff. And it said they need to be a rainy day fund for when they don't get in the Champions League and all that stuff, because then it saves you having to sell players. And that's fair enough. That's a prudent financial model. It's also quite negative. I would think give this guy the tools, and you won't need to worry about not qualifying for the Champions League, because they'll do it every year.
Yeah.
Give the tools to compete in the Champions League. Don't turn out the patchwork team. I mean, they signed 9 players in the summer. Palmer, I think, is starting to come out in a really good game. I think having been very kind of sceptical about him at the start, I think he now looks like a bit of a player. Right? He could kick on. But the rest, I'm not that sure about the signings. So a bit of a wasted summer for him. But I mean, give the guy the tools and see what he does.
Mate, you're saying you're not too sure about it. You just need to look at the team.
Yeah.
You know, Brendan Rodgers knows. Look, I don't know. I would surmise, I would guess that Brendan Rodgers would feel right. Okay, so let's say Celtic's policy is we've earmarked £18 to £20 million to spend. And what we'll do is we'll bring in 9 guys at £2 million.
Yeah.
And we'll hope that 3 or 4 of them go on to be, you know, make a ton of real coin on them. Brendan Rodgers, I think, would be looking for the Celtic board to approach it with a little bit more of risk. And instead of signing 9 at £2 million apiece, sign 3 at £6 million and give them 3 starters.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, he'll turn those £6 million players. Look, by the way, this shouldn't go without being noted as well. The difference in Matt O'Reilly, who's working under Brendan Rodgers, Maeda, Liam Scales.
No.
These players they are coming on leaps and bounds under this guy. Yeah. If you went out and bought 3 £6 million players, heavy investment, you're not spreading the risk because you don't have 9 guys hoping that, you know, 3-4 of them come good. You're actually hoping that 3 of them come good because it's a big investment.
Yeah.
But when you look at the way that these players are improving under Brendan Rodgers, what's a £6 million player going to be looking like in 2 years' time? £20 million? You know, and I think that's what Brendan Rodgers, if he was able to communicate how he feels to the board, I think that's what he would say. Next summer, let's do away with the 9 at £2 million, and let's go for quality. Let me pick 3 guys that will come straight into this side and make it better.
That's what needs to happen. The squad's too big. He's got about 33 players. His squad is bloated with guys that are never going to get a game. So that in January, the first task is empty out the guys that are not part of the scene and make way for these guys. No one's saying go and spend £60 million in a transfer window. I mean, like I said, they spent £20 million this year. By the way, net spend was less with Jota money and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So no one's saying go and spend £30-40 million. But like you say, get 3 guys in at £7-8 million that can strengthen the team and see where they go. I think it was telling last night they struggled because the bench wasn't strong enough.
Yeah.
There needed to be a striker bought in the summer. I don't think O is going to cut it, and I don't think Brendan thinks either, because he obviously didn't see him last night. So a striker was necessary. We touched on, I think, a quality replacement for Jota. That might be Palmer, but we have to wait and see. I think the signs are good with him, but early days. And a centre-half was vital, a proper centre-half, not a kind of development centre-half, a good, strong centre-half. Although Scales has come in and been a revelation. Challenge for left-back with Greg Taylor to keep him going, because obviously Burnaby is not going to cut it. There's 3 or 4 signings. That's all needed. Didn't need
I think if you went back to the summer, I think Brendan Rodgers would have wanted a left-back, a centre-half, a goalkeeper, a centre mid, and a starting winger, and a striker.
Yep.
Which is quite a lot. But I don't think you would expect to get all of that. I think you would expect to get some of it. And I'm not sure that he has. Well, he hasn't. He's got Palmer is playing his way in, right? But at this minute in time, is he an upgrade on Jota? No, he's not. He's not anywhere near an upgrade on Jota. He's a downgrade on Jota with the potential to become a good player, but he's not going to be a Jota. So in that regard, Celtic are weakened in terms of the first 11. And yet, what he's building here, you know, over the last wee while, you would have looked at it and said, there's one place up for grabs in this team. And you're right, Mick, Palmer has managed to get in front of the opposition there. And he's now looking like a first-pick player. I don't think James Forrest is out of this argument yet either. And I'm not entirely sure if it was down to me if I would be going with Forrest or Palmer just now. You go with Palmer because you brought him in and there are signs that he's going to, you know, make a real impact. But I think it's a 50-50 call for me between him and James Forrest.
No, I think Palmer's earned his right in the team. I mean, he's scored a couple of some cracking goals recent weeks. He's playing really well. He needs games to get up to speed. I think you stick with him and let's see what happens. You think he's getting the Brendan Rodgers treatment just now?
Yeah.
James, you get what you get. You know what you're going to get from James Forrest. He's a tremendous servant to Celtic, and he'll still have a role to play. But Palmer's that's his shirt just now.
No, I don't disagree, Mick. But I'm just saying, if you were to look at the two of them, and I was wondering last night if he might go to James Forrest to start, because he knows that he can trust him. He knows exactly what he's going to get for James Forrest.
Yeah.
And Palmer, but Palmer is proven, you're right, he's some big moments in big games, and that makes him the sort of player that I think is worth investing some time in. But James Forrest, for me, you know, I don't think his race is run just yet.
No.
And also, then you look at Palmer, and, you know, in that second half, he should have better energy levels to get back and help out more.
Yeah, this is a guy
able to do that.
This is his first taste of the Champions League and intensity of that environment. I mean, I'm not surprised that he ran at this team. I mean, it's a tough job as well. He's not used to playing at that level, so that experience will benefit him as well.
Of course it will. Yeah.
But you look behind that, you look at kind of Yang, Tellio, not appeared yet. These are signs from the summer that no really. Trouble in the first team at any point in time. I don't know if they will. I mean, Tellio, we don't know, but he's not been seen yet. He's fit in training, but he's not near the level yet. He's one for the future, as we hear these guys might be a cracker for the future, but it's not yet. So there's work to be done in that squad, I think. But you just see, as mentioned, the manager's certainly working his magic just now. If you're a Scottish team watching that first half last night, you were thinking, oh, in the name of God. Oh, no, this is coming. Oh, no.
see, just on the players that, I don't think we've mentioned them yet, but I thought Bernardo looked a player last night. I thought he looked really good. It was difficult to come on.
I thought he was thrown into a really difficult situation and he did well.
No.
I don't feel that Celtic's performance level dropped noticeably. I don't think he's a Hatate.
Aye.
And I think, you know, had Hatate not picked up that injury, then who knows what we might have watched last night. But I think he did fine. Without being, you know, without running it, as you wouldn't really expect him, but he came on and he did everything that was required of him.
Aye. And see Mick,
in midfield.
Yes,
Gregan and O'Reilly were just streets ahead of everybody, really, apart from when Griezmann dropped in there. You know, what a player that is. You could watch him all day as well.
And see, Mick, just going back to you mentioned about the tools for Brendan Rodgers. I mean, Chris Sutton, I saw him saying on Twitter that Celtic really missed Giakoumakis. I get that strikers like that don't grow in trees, but I think it, you know, we touched on, it doesn't look like Ozil's going to be the backup striker to Kyogo anytime soon.
Listen, Giakoumakis was decent, scored a few goals, threw his toys at the prime and left. It left, over... Nearly a year ago, like, time to move on for Giakoumakis, right? He's away playing in semi-retirement, scoring a barload in the MLS. Good luck to him.
Should have been replaced.
Always a guy who's to replace him. A younger kind of version, potential, more selling value and all that stuff. But I don't get the impression that Brendan really fancies him much, to be honest. He's not got a lot of time. Occasional wee bits from the bench at the end. I think he prefers to play Maeda through the middle as a second choice. Problem is, Maeda for the first time in 2.5 years looked tired last night at the end. I thought, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, this is a guy who, he spoke to us after Livingston and I said, you must be tired playing with 10 men, playing 3 different jobs. I mean, I don't get tired. Last night, he got tired. But at some point, he is actually human after all. He was blown at his backside at the end.
I think he was entitled to feel a little bit fatigued.
Listen, you'd be tired watching him.
Looking ahead to the weekend, obviously, Celtic have now got Hibs at Easter Road. Obviously, Hibs weren't great at Ibrox last week, but it's still not going to be an easy game for Celtic.
I disagree.
Really?
I think you'll find it will be an easy game for Celtic.
Have you been watching Hibs?
I mean, the Hibs performance at Ibrox the weekend was, I mean, it was absolutely diabolical.
I was trying to get it, you guys.
But, you know, and I know it's always more difficult when you're going away from home, especially Tynecastle, Easter Road. These are notoriously tricky grounds. But I think, as Michael said, when you see Celtic hitting that level of performance last night, they're not going to go back down. The Celtic won't yo-yo in form. This is now a point of the season where they begin to motor. And, you know, as much as it damages a bit of confidence, the fact that you're, you know, not winning games in the Champions League, the opposite can be true as well. Celtic have got a lot to come off these pitches after these games that they've had and say, do you know what, we've done really well there. You know, it's not like Rangers in last season's Champions League where your confidence is just going through a shredder. And by the time you get to the weekend, you don't know, you're starting to doubt, can I play? Am I any good? Because I've just been absolutely ripped apart. And the damage that gets done to confidence when you're on the end of savage beatings, it does impact. But I think the flip side for Celtic is, do you know what, guys? That was brilliant. Loved it. We've played really, really well. Just not done enough to win the game. Right, on you go. It's Easter Road at the weekend. Let's get back to those levels. You can almost hear Callum McGregor saying it. And I expect another step forward from Celtic. I expect him to go Easter Road. I expect him to dominate it. And I expect him to win quite comfortably, to be perfectly honest with you, Daniel.
Aye. And just to go back to finishing the Champions League, we mentioned it a bit earlier, but the games remaining. Feyenoord at home, Atletico and Lazio away. Mick, even if Celtic were to beat Feyenoord at home and beat Lazio away, they're only 7 points. And even then, it's probably unlikely they'll get third. Just...
No, I think you've got to hope that you've got to think that Feyenoord can beat Lazio again.
Aye, sorry. Aye, right.
Feyenoord come to Glasgow for the last game of the group.
That's right, it's the last one.
So Celtic's next two are away.
Atletico
Madrid and Lazio.
I mean, Madrid away, that's tough. I think you've got to win in Rome and got to beat Feyenoord. That would give them 7 points. And you've got to think Atletico will beat... Lazio will lose as well. So there's a lot. I think it's going to be too big an ask, to be honest with you.
There needs to be a bit of realism here. I don't think anybody can put their hand in heart, even though Celtic performed so admirably last night. I don't think you can think that they're going to go to Madrid and get a win.
No.
I think a point would be an incredible result, and I don't expect them to get that either. So you'd be sitting there with 1 point after 12, going into the final two games, Lazio away. You know, I think it's a bit, you know, glib for us to be sitting here saying, if Celtic could just go to Lazio and get an away win there. Come on, guys, let's get real. A point there would be a good result as well.
It'd be an amazing result.
So I actually think it might come down to, can Celtic pip Lazio for third? I think that's the way this group is starting to shape. And again, that will depend. If Lazio beat Celtic in Rome, then that's that ship sailed as well, I think.
At the very least, right? And I get Feyenoord are a quality outfit. We saw that last night. But Celtic have to end this 10-year wait for a win at home. I mean, whatever way you look at it, that's mad. That's a mad stat that Celtic haven't got a win at home in the Champions League since 2013.
It is. But as Brendan Rodgers said ahead of the game last night, so it's not just, you know, it's not just looking back. With 2020 vision, he says, look, he feels that they are getting closer. They are progressing. You know, listen, he was responsible for some of this run, but I don't think you can hold him responsible second time round. I don't know if Celtic are going to get a win in this group. Maybe a final, they're already home and hosed and happily through. Maybe in the last game of the group, Celtic, because there wasn't that much between the two sides in the first game, and Celtic were nowhere near as strong and impressive a unit as they are now than they were in the first game of the group. So maybe there is an opportunity there, but I think it's a step-by-step process. I think that Brendan Rodgers would certainly like to end this group with some points on the board as opposed to just one. I'm not sure that you're going to get the end of this run just yet. I think it might be a year in the making for Celtic, this Champions League, you know, getting Champions League ready.
It's a bit of, I mean, this 10-year thing, and it's been a bit of a stick to batter Celtic with, and to an extent Rangers as well, last year as well. It's like 12 games. I mean, out of those 12 games, who were Celtic realistically expected to beat, and who they did not beat, they should have beaten? Anderlecht, maybe, but they won 3-1 out there and had to just protect that result to get third place. Borussia Mönchengladbach, big German team, kind of expect to beat them. I mean, these are teams at PSG, Man City, Barcelona.
Shakhtar,
maybe.
Should have beat Shakhtar. So there's 2 of 12, yeah. And we should have beat Lazio last time round. Not should have beat them, but they could have beat them. Yeah. So it's a bit of a stick. And also, I kind of get defensive. My mates down in England, they're always winding you up about Scottish football and Europe and all that stuff. And you think, listen, if you send a team who are in the playoffs in the Championship into the Champions League, how would they get on? They get ripped to pieces, right? They get absolutely torn to bits. That's what Celtic's budget is. It's as comparable with a team in the playoffs in the Championship. And you're asking them to go and compete with Atletico Madrid, with PSG, with Real Madrid, these teams, right? And not get leathered. The fact that they're not getting leathered, I think, is actually quite commendable. Because it's really a tough playground. That doesn't mean that we don't demand and expect more of our teams in Europe, because they do get a shot most years, and they should find a way to try and compete. And I think Celtic, to an extent, are finding a way to compete. They just need to find that next step to get results.
I think that, you know, it would be an absolute, you know, tremendous achievement from this point, you know, 1 point gained at the halfway stage. If Celtic could find a way to qualify for the Europa League, because let's be honest about it, that's the level that you know, Rangers, Celtic, they're more comfortable at that. They should be more, and rightly so, they should be more comfortable at that level.
Yeah.
I think they've been asked to compete at a level which is just beyond them at the Champions League. So if Celtic could find a way to get out of this group in third place and drop into the Europa League, by the way, you never know who you're going to get there. You could come up against by all intents and purposes, a Champions League side there. But you just feel that, you know, that would be an achievement, and maybe the learnings that they talk about these days could continue if Celtic were to go into the Europa League and have a few games there and, you know, again, build on what the kind of foundations that have already been laid down so far in these three games in the Champions League. But as we're saying, I do think it's going to be a big ask to get there.
Guys, I could talk to you all day about this. It's my favourite time of the week, but I think that's brought us to the end of this week's Record Celtic podcast.
I hope not. I'm in Aberdeen. I've got to jump the tractor up to Aberdeen.
Save travel.
Get the mega bus, Mick.
Oh, tell you what. Need a hovercraft to get up there.
I save travels up. Keith, Mick, it's always a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining me. And everyone listening at home, thanks very much.